Do you ever feel your workplace is a bit of a zoo? According to my next guest, you're probably right, and your colleagues are more like chimps than you'd care to imagine. But here's the thing. You are too. Andrew O'Keefe takes groups of executives on tours to Sydney's Taronga Zoo to observe the behaviour of chimps and in turn learn something about their own leadership styles. Andrew's theory is that offices are not our natural environment. We've only been in them for a couple of centuries. And not only that, we bring to the office instincts that have served us well for hundreds of thousands of years, maybe longer. But that this can be tricky. Andrew joins me in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you, Richard.
Why do you run the leadership workshops at the zoo?
Two reasons. One, it's a great place to take a zoological view of humans. And then secondly, we can go and look at other social animals, animals whose survival strategy is similar to ours based on family units and clans. And chimpanzees are the great example.
Mm. Well, the dominant male chimp at Taronga has had the top job for about a decade, and he commandeered this big rock in the enclosure. Is that? I was talking to Fran Kelly briefly this morning. Is that the equivalent of the corner office?
It is, the corner office or the throne. We were there one particular day, or whenever we're there, people want to know which one's the alpha male.
Yeah.
And this particular day early in my journey of showing people at the zoo, and the keeper pointed to a rock about 20 paces away, or a chimp sitting on a rock 20 paces away, and said, "That's Labutu sitting on the rock." And then the keeper added the insight, the reason we think he sits on that rock, that's the rock the prior alpha male used to sit on.
Right.
So once you've got claim to that rock or that office, you've made it.
So one can assume that in time, when he's supplanted, that the next alpha male will sit on that rock
too. We suspect so, don't we?
And that's actually building a culture, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah. That's right. Behaviour passed from one generation to the next.
So how has he managed to stay alpha male for so long? I mean, because I know there are at least there are two keen rivals on his tail.
Yes, so there's two other adult males. The reason he retains his job is really basically his leadership style. So he's constructive. He spends time with family groups. He allows the kids to groom him. He spends time with the females. And what happens, the indicative behaviour of all that is when there's a display from the two rivals trying to supplant Labutu, then typically it's the females, the followers, who step in. We were there one day and we were horrified that most of these 18 chimps were bruised and cut and limping, and we talked to the keepers, what happened? And there'd been a couple of days before a really big fight, and one of the other males had taken on the alpha.
Yeah.
But the females that intervene to support Labutu.
Right. Because, I mean, the classic model that we think of is that the alpha is the biggest or most aggressive, certainly the one that can intimidate the others. And I'm sure that must work. I mean, that must offer something to to them, and indeed possibly to executives who want to make it to the top. But you're saying this is a more long-term strategy.
Yeah, and it's interesting also that one of the other males at Taronga is adopting Labutu's style. This other one used to be really aggressive. There's a third male who's aggressive, just a bully, and the keepers are suggesting he'll probably never make it. But number two is starting to adopt Labutu's model. And what's interesting, and Jane Goodall tells us from her studies in Africa, is that the constructive males, those males who use, or those leaders who use their power well, they last as leaders for about 8 to 10 years. The bullies or the tyrants, they only get to last for about 2 years.
Before they meet someone.
Well, until there's almost this drive or energy within the community to replace the current leader. You could imagine that, like in our societies and our workplaces, you're very happy to follow certain leaders. You're happy to keep them as leaders. But the bullies, then there's this greater drive within the community to replace them.
What does that say for us? Because I was reading, certainly in the last few years in America, the average tenure at the top for a chief executive of a large firm is probably about 3 years.
Yes, that's right. Well, and there's a lot of pressures within sort of the corporate world for survivors. But if we looked at settled workplaces, family businesses run by owners, the message is to use power well, use it appropriately, not underusing, but also not overusing power as a leader.
It's interesting too, because you've found that basically leaders shouldn't try and be in charge of a team much bigger than seven.
Yeah, so where that comes from is that's our basic family unit. So we survived on the savannah plains as small family units within villages of a certain size. And that survival strategy is that we supported each other for food supply and to protect against predators. So mm-hmm. we have this intimate need to belong to a few people, around about seven. It's interesting, even when Facebook does the numbers, they find the same thing of intimate friends number about five to six people. And so for workplaces, the message is, if this is our natural building block and the group that we need to bond with intimately, then we should design our organisations based on that family model. So we would have leaders in charge of about seven, so between five and nine people.
Mm-hmm. But organisations are mostly larger than that. It's a very small business that's only seven. What happens when it gets past, 20 times that size, 140, 150?
So what we would do is we would just keep building that up. So a chief executive would have a unit of about seven,
mm-hmm.
and leaders who try to manage 12 to 16 people, it's handy to know that that's way beyond the natural capacity and the group dynamics will shift. And then it would just feed down, multiplied throughout the whole. So we could then build organisations, whether it's 100, 1,000, 100,000 people. And the other second big unit of design is in units, departments, subsidiaries of around about 150. And that's our clan size. And where that number comes from is the science of our brain size.
Right. So we can't deal with more than 150.
So we get our sense of identity of one of 150. There's research from Professor Dunbar out of Oxford who's Melbourne found Dunbar. A correlation between group size and the brain size of us as social animals. So we're brainy. We're the brainiest animal brain per body size. We can feel a sense of identity. You could imagine in a clan on the savannah, the politics, the relationships, the generational knowledge that you needed to gather. We can manage around about the complexity of 150. Chimps are the next most brainiest. Dunbar would predict as what happens in the wild, that they would live in clans or communities of around about 50. And the three groups originally in Gombe that Jane Goodall studied were three communities of around about 50 animals.
On Life Matters today, my guest is Andrew O'Keefe, author and management consultant. We're talking about the issues that he traverses in Hardwired Humans, which is published by Roundtable Press. It's also the name of his management consultancy. I find that interesting because implies is that we work best in teams that we feel we belong to closely of about seven, and the organisations are about 150. But, of course, many organisations are much bigger than that.
Yeah, so organisations would then build from the 150. So
are you saying we get problems if it gets bigger, though?
So people will have a difficulty identifying. Let's say we're a 2,000, 10,000-person organisation. People won't associate of being one of 10,000. But they will associate. So let's say Flight Centre, for instance.
Yep.
They build their organisation based on families of seven. So when people walk past a Flight Centre store, look in the window, they'll see no more than seven employees servicing that store.
Okay.
And Flight Centre is so confident about this that if the neighbourhood can support more than seven staff, sales, the business can support more than seven, they'll build another store in the same neighbourhood. And then the next level within Flight Centre is the village, which is around about 80 to 100 people within a geography. And so the message to organisations is, let's build our organisations and have managers and senior executives leading groups that relate to our natural size. And so there's a natural energy in that.
Something also that comes up in the book that I was really interested in, because you hear a lot of firms make a fuss about this. They say, we're egalitarian. We have an egalitarian type approach. We have a flat management style. That's the other thing you hear. But we, according to our history, our biology, and certainly when you look at our closest cousins, we're used to hierarchy, aren't we? We understand the concept of status.
We do. And really at a zoological level or anthropological level, it is characteristic of social animals for there be a hierarchy. And in fact, what it allows is just the natural operation of the species. So let's again say, compared to chimps, and chimps are just so like us, that's so informative, that Jane Goodall observed that if a wild group of chimps was without a leader, that is, let's say there was a two-year period when two males were competing for the top job, there was no single leader, manager of the hierarchy, then the group was in absolute chaos for those 2 years until that leadership issue was resolved.
Well, I don't want to draw too long a bow here, but at the moment we have a government, a federal government, that is hanging on by a knife edge and at the whim of some independents, and it means that they can't govern in the way that governments normally can, and we have an aggressive out there leader of the opposition. Isn't that what we're seeing writ large at the moment?
It is, and even within the opposition, you know, Tony Abbott gets to be the leader of the party with, I think from recollection, about one vote or a very narrow margin. So he doesn't have such strong power. And then, yeah, of course, the government's leading on such a knife edge. They don't have the power that one ought to have to be a confident leader.
Another instinct that we are hardwired seemingly to make is judgments about others and situations almost immediately. Now, sometimes we can be dead on with this and sometimes we can be completely wrong. Given that we can be completely wrong, why do we keep doing it?
It's really a survival strategy that serves us really well, which is a really quick form of making sense of something. So we clearly know, don't we, that we're really quick to judge other people, judge situations, circumstances. And the key reason why we make those quick judgments is to give us a quick form of classifying. And basically our classifying or sense-making is into binary alternatives, such as good or bad, or yep. I like that person, don't like that person. And that's all part of the complexity of the environment which we lived in. We grew on the savannah. And also things like if there was a rustle in the bush over there 50,000 years ago, it didn't pay to apply your rational judgment to that. You had a quick rule of thumb to go on. But yeah, what's then critical to understand is that once we classify, it takes a lot to alter our point of view.
So first impressions are so
the first
important.
Impressions, and we make those first impressions within a couple of seconds.
Andrew, there is so much more in this, actually, but I'm going to leave it there. I don't want to give away the whole book. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you, Richard.
That's Andrew O'Keefe, and he's a consultant, and his firm, and indeed the book, is called Hardwired Human. Humans. It's published by Roundtable Press. You'll find details on the website. It's fascinating, including in there, he talks about those first seven words you say in any situation and how vital that can be. There's some fantastic examples. It's so interesting. This is Life Matters with me, Richard Ady. You're on ABC Radio National. And coming up next, from zoos to virtual worlds and their potential for education.